dude, working in treatment is like, or treatment does not have a monopoly on being helpful to people. If you want to be helpful, like, dude, you know what's very helpful that people need is, like, plumbing. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, dude, you want an opportunity to, like, be helpful to people. Dude, work at Publix, too. Like, there's, like, so many different... I would say everywhere is an opportunity for us to be able to be helpful to other people. I think that, for me, working in treatment is kind of, like, a unique way for me to be able to be helpful.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. Before we get started, we want to be really clear that nothing shared here is on behalf of any recovery program, treatment facility, or organization. We're speaking only from our own experiences. We support all pathways to sobriety and recovery, and our goal is simple: to help people feel less alone and suffer less. Today, on his first ever podcast, we have Southpaw. We have Cody and his dog, Southpaw. He has 8 years of sobriety, which is longer than Southpaw's been alive, 7 years of experience working in the drug, alcohol, mental health field, and he is here today to share his personal experience. So thank you, Cody, for joining us.
Yeah, guys, thank you so much for having me.
But most especially, thank you for bringing your dog.
Yeah, he's really excited to be here. Yeah, Southpaw has actually been working in the mental health field for literally his entire life and is just really good at it.
He was just born to do it?
He was literally born to do it.
Well, how did you get involved with working in treatment?
So I remember around like a year of my sobriety, this guy comes up to me and he's like, "Hey man, how would you like to drive my sober living van?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Like, that sounds awesome." Because like up until this point, I was moving antique furniture for a living and I absolutely hated it. And I was like, well, I don't like have a degree. I literally the past like 10 years of my life has just been like me burning it to the ground and also moving furniture. And so what else could I do? And so when this guy approached me, it was like this really cool opportunity to just do anything different. And then I did that for a little bit. And then one day somebody else approaches me and says, "Hey, how would you like to go be a recovery coach?" And then I go work over there. And then somebody else came and said, "Hey, how would you like to go like work at an actual treatment center?" And it just kept on happening like that until one day somebody's like, "Hey, how do you want to be a case manager? How would you like to be an alumni coordinator?" And then eventually I landed at the place that I'm at today. And so, yeah, that's how I got into it.
So were any of these jobs something you were actively seeking out at any point, or was it just someone knowing you and being like, "Hey, you'd be a good fit for this"?
Yeah, it was literally just knowing people. And yeah, just like really good networking, I would say. But yeah, at no point in time did I ever like go like fill out a job application and say, "Hey, are you guys hiring?" You know, just at least for me, just a lot of things just started, you know, as long as I was just putting my best foot forward, like things just kind of worked out.
Wow. That's really cool. It's always like cool to see when things were just kind of like divinely orchestrated, as opposed to, I mean, the stories of like working really hard and it paying off are really cool, and the stories of like, "Hey, this just kind of worked out," those are cool as well. And so no college education, did you have to go through any sort of certifications along the way, or was it just gaining experience as you went?
Yeah, it was a lot of gaining experience. So I will say something that was very helpful to me was like 2 years into me working in treatment, somebody approached me and was like, "Hey, you should start taking certified addiction counselor classes." I actually never finished those out, but I did learn a lot in taking those classes. And also when I started taking it, it kind of put me on everybody's radar. And so like, yeah, like, you know, just going back to that piece of like how everything did work out and like, you know, me just seeking out to like keep on developing myself in ways that would be relevant to my field was also really important. I got certified as a, I did not get certified as an addiction counselor. I did get certified at one point on like anger resolution. I got certified at one point on group facilitation. So those were also really helpful.
Okay. And at any point, like being a person in recovery yourself and then also working in recovery, did it ever feel like the line got muddied in between helping out somebody in a recovery program versus helping somebody out at the treatment facility you were working at?
Yes. Yeah, dude. I feel like helping out somebody in like a recovery setting, I don't know what's like, it can like look like tough love, you know, where you're just like, can I swear? Are we swearing? Do we swear here? Yeah. Yes. Where it's just
we're
like
people.
Yeah. Right. Where it's like, dude, like, just like shut the fuck up and like do it. Right. Do the thing. And you're just like sometimes just being like very brutally honest with somebody, and where, you know, I think being helpful in like treatment can like be honest, but also in a way where I'm like just like also holding like a lot of space for somebody. Because I think when somebody's coming in treatment, like I actually don't know their story. Mm-hmm. And so it's like really important that I kind of like tailor my response to like help meet the needs of this person, where like if I'm helping somebody in recovery, they've kind of like approached me to see if like there's something that I can help them with, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So you almost have like prior knowledge of the person, or it's the person who had the desire to seek your help in the first place, or as opposed to being at work, is like your job is to be there for this person, and you may not know the details of their story, and you may not know what they respond to. So it kind of just has to be a neutral, like, you know, neutral, positive thing, and just kind of see how they react and go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like, you know, where recovery is just something that I'm like freely giving away, and it's like, dude, like I'm here to help in whatever area that I can, you know, in treatment. I'm like, you know, trying to approach it from this like trauma informed and like very like person centered perspective.
Mm-hmm. Is that from the recovery coaching? The person centered and the trauma informed piece of it?
Like there's a little bit of like recovery coaching, and I just think that that just ends up being like kind of best practice whenever you're, you know, get a little bit of experience in the field. I think like that's just like when you've just been doing it for a while, that just ends up being like a place that you just kind of gravitate towards.
Okay. And what would like person-focused care look like as opposed to like maybe tough love?
You know, because if somebody like, and this like, I don't know, maybe it sounds like abrasive or like not nice. It's like, once again, if somebody like approaches me from this like recovery perspective, it's, you know, you're just like, actually you're just focusing kind of on this like one thing. It's like, dude, I can't stop doing heroin. Wait, could you repeat your question one more time? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. Person-centered care versus tough love.
Yeah. Tough love is me just like kind of just like being like really blunt. And like, I'm telling you just like the truth that I think that you need to hear in this moment. And I think person-centered care is just like looking at the entirety of something, right? Like where I'm like looking at the fact that like, dude, this person's like probably like had a really tough childhood. This person is probably dealing with like a diagnosis and like all these other unseen things that like I'm not familiar with. Also, I think it's important, like where like with tough love, I'm kind of, dude, and this sounds so terrible as I'm saying it, but with tough love, I'm just kind of like looking at it as like, dude, you just don't know what you're talking about, bro.
Mm-hmm.
With a person-centered approach, I'm actually like kind of looking at you from this lens of like, dude, you also know yourself best, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's like where, at least for me, that's like where the difference ends up being.
And so do you think like the difference in which approach to take kind of comes from, obviously like at work, person-centered is going to be the best way to go. But in, you know, the casual setting of a recovery room, you know, might it be knowing a little bit about that person? And if you try to to bring like the whole picture together where like, I don't know, because there's like that stigma about talking about emotions and feelings, especially in early recovery when we're just learning how to feel them again and we absolutely are not talking about them. Whereas like if you take a tough love approach, that might be more familiar from if you're like, especially if you're coming in off the street. So it's like, yeah, we can still talk the same. It's just we're going to have different outcomes right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. We're still essentially trying to get to the same place with people. Right. Where like I just want to be able to be there for you. But like how I'm going to be there for my buddies is like going to end up looking a little bit differently than like, you know, how I'm going to try to like show up for, like I said, for like you're talking about, we're for somebody who's in just this like very like vulnerable space that like there is no rapport. There is no relationship. It's just like, dude, you're just like coming in and all I know is that like you desperately need help.
Right. What do you think, Josie, about the person focus versus tough love?
I think sometimes people think tough love is, you know, having to be mean, but I think it's just having firm boundaries and not allowing that person to cross them anymore. For example, if you have someone in your life that is an active addiction and they keep coming to you, I need more money. I need to stay at the house again. I need to do this. I need to do that. And they just like are like sucking resources out of you, but they're doing nothing to get better. And you've tried to be there for them and, you know, they have access to the resources and you have to cut them off. That to me is tough love, because you are, a lot of people don't realize it's like that is what's in the best interest for them, because if you continue to let them milk you, they're not going to want to do anything different. Like if I'm getting free money and free resources and I get to still use and drink, okay, like I'm going to take advantage of you. So that's tough love to me. And then you said person-centered.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's meeting people where they're at and just like looking at each person's unique situation and what they need. Yeah. But they have to be willing.
Mm-hmm.
I think tough love is important when the person is not willing.
Mm.
And person-centered is, okay, you're willing. So let's dive into what are you going through? What are you struggling with? Have you, you know, these are the different pathways. These are the different resources. Let's kind of like work together.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, as we're talking about this, all I'm thinking is like, wow, you know what? They're actually, and these like two things don't actually necessarily have to be like these mutually exclusive things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can, you know, on either end, right? If I'm just like meeting like some like new person on the street, or if like I'm like, you know, having somebody in like a professional environment, I can approach somebody with like tough love, mm-hmm. you know, with like the appropriate boundaries. And I can also like look at them like the entirety of them and tailor my response according to that. And so, yeah, I absolutely love what you said about that.
Corey, thank you.
Yeah, very well said.
I took a workshop this morning, so this was good timing.
Well, the recovery room to working in recovery pipeline is super, super strong. So what do you think draws people, especially people early in recovery, to really want to work in treatment?
Dude, I think that like, okay, two things. I have two thoughts on that. One being, at least for me, I had no education. I had like a 10-year like gap in my resume, and so the fact that like anything was available to me was like awesome. And then I think like the other really big thing is, you know, people in recovery, I think really want to be able to help people,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I think like even like for to a degree, even when they're like in it, mm-hmm. right. I think they really do have a desire to be helpful. It's just like, you know, they're smoking crack and they're getting really drunk, and like it's like getting in the way of those values.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it can be really easy to look at, you know, working in treatment and the ability to work with directly with people who are suffering as a very fulfilling and as like a very fulfilling, like, you know, thing to be able to do, and just like a great opportunity to feel helpful.
Mm. Have you ever wanted to work in treatment?
Absolutely not. I've been asked that question a lot, which is funny because, like, growing up, like, I always told my mom, I was like, I want my life to have meaning and I want to help people. Like, that's what I want to do. And then, you know, have my little addiction, my little big addiction, and, you know, get – like, I never felt the urge to want to work in treatment. My aunt has worked in treatment. Like, she is, you know, a professional, and so is her husband. And I think, like, seeing, you know, their work schedule, like, their work-life balance, which, you know, they maintain in a way that works for them, but, like, just seeing how hard they work, I'm like, yo, that's not for me. You know, like, those times, like, where I would go days without hearing from my aunt because she'd be working in the facilities, and I'm like, yeah, you know what, like, I'll hop out on the street, you know? And I have found myself in more instances being able to help somebody in everyday life as opposed to helping someone already seeking recovery, because it's like being the person who, like, recovers out loud. Like, I've, like, on multiple occasions have found people just, like, opening up to me about, like, a drinking problem that they're facing, and then they're going, like, I don't even know why I'm talking to you about this. And I'm like, hey, no, this is great. Like if you want to, we can absolutely continue talking about this. And then, you know, letting them know different resources that are available. I'm like, you know, if you think you might need to go to treatment, like, that's an option. If you need help finding where to go, like, I can get you connected with people. Or if you want to try, like, you know, a different type of recovery group, like, there's options. Here's how you can find one, like, all that sort of stuff, as opposed to, like, being in a – it's just never appealed to me. Like, I like helping people, but I respect people who work in treatment. I just don't think – like, I also don't feel like I'm a very nurturing person. I think that's a huge piece of it, too, where I'm, like, sometimes when people come to me when this is going to make me sound like an asshole, but, like, sometimes when, like, someone's, like, really going through something – and, like, you know how, like, when someone's going through something that you yourself have been through, but it's not something you very, like, hold compassion for anymore. You just kind of like, come on, let's get over it. So sometimes people come to me with something, and it's, like, this big – they've made it into this big thing. And, like, I can just see – I'm like, ooh, that just looks like it's self-pity. Like, this is really easy to solve. You know, I relate to it. I've been there. Let's get over it, you know? But that's not how you talk to people. And so I have to, like – take a minute and be like, okay, like, let me put myself back in that situation. Be like, what did I need at that moment? Okay, that's what this person needs. But, like, it takes a lot out of me. Like, I don't know. I feel like that admits me to being an asshole. But I'm not – that's not my default to be nurturing. Like, if you, like, fell down and you need someone to help, like, scrape the dirt off your knees and, like, it's going to hurt, but, like, we're going to get better, like, I will help you through the tough shit. But, like, feelings and emotions – I don't know. That's why my friends call me dad.
Yeah. Just with that said, dude, working in treatment is like, or treatment does not have a monopoly on being helpful to people. If you want to be helpful, like, dude, you know what's very helpful that people need is, like, plumbing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, dude, you want an opportunity to, like, be helpful to people. Dude, work at Publix too. Like, there's, like, so many different – I would say everywhere is an opportunity for us to be able to be helpful to other people. I think that for me, working in treatment is kind of, like, a unique way for me to be able to be helpful, you know, where, like, you know, I'm not able to, like, you know, go to, like, Publix and, like, check in with somebody and they're, like, ask them, hey, how are you feeling today? And then they're, like, feeling good. I'm like, yeah, but let's go deeper. Like, I'm getting fired from the job at that point.
You should actually do that to the Publix cashier next time you're there. Like, no, let's unpack it. How are you actually feeling?
Yeah. No, but, like, let's pull out a feelings wheel. And I really, like, hey, sorry, buddy. Good is actually not on the feelings wheel. And we're going to sit here until you give me one. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine, I'm just, like, literally just imagining you having, like a shopping cart, and the feelings wheel is where, like, the child is supposed to go, and you're just, like, walking around the store interviewing people.
These poor, like, teenagers that are working at Publix.
Like, how's your home life?
Seems like we're feeling upset today.
No, but I like that point of there's so many ways to help people, and like one job isn't necessarily more helpful than the other. It's just, you know, where do you fit in? Like, where is your skill level to help somebody, and where is your desire to help people? You know, if your desire doesn't match your skill level, like how can we boost your skill level so you can, you know, fulfill your wildest dreams of helping all of the people?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that said, what would be the difference between somebody's intentions to help somebody versus somebody's aptitude to actually be able to help somebody?
I want to laugh about aptitude. Look, all right, real quick. I just got to say, earlier we went over like some of the questions, and Sarah like mentioned aptitude, and I was like, look, I just need to ask you, what does aptitude mean? Right. And so I just had to bring that up because I will start laughing about it. So what's the difference between like somebody's like intentions to be helpful and somebody's aptitude?
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a thing. Can I rephrase a question?
Yeah.
What's more important, actually? What's more relevant to somebody working in treatment? Somebody's intentions or somebody's aptitude? I actually think somebody's intentions is actually so much more important than somebody's aptitude. Because like I heard somebody say like, dude, how do you find a good racehorse? Well, you don't find the fastest horse. You actually find a horse that really likes to run. And I think though it then becomes a matter of, well, then what are their intentions? What are their values?
Mm.
Because if I'm solely coming in with this like intention of like helping people, well, you know, that can also look like a lot of different things, right? I want to be helpful, but man, I'm like end up like enabling a little bit, right? You know, we were talking about the tough love piece.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to help people, but I like don't have great boundaries. I think it's then, you know, of just certain values that just end up translating very well to this, you know, one being like just like a love of the game, man. Right? Like just, I would say treatment is, you know, we look at it as just like kind of like in as like medical, right? Where it's like, all right, you're going in and you're like fixing someone's arm or whatnot. And it's not, it's conversation. It's a creative process. It's you're having a creative and collaborative process with another human being about their own healing. And so I think that there is, you know, some values of like curiosity,
mm-hmm.
Of just like passion for the game, of yeah, a desire to like be able to help people, of empathy and also of patience. You know, not saying every single person, like dude, even myself, I have like all these values like to this like perfect T, but I would say that those end up being some qualities that are very helpful for somebody to be able to like go into, because dude, I know people who, I know people who are very good with like open-ended questions.
Mm-hmm.
I know people who are very good with like, with theory, who, are fantastic with conceptualizing of like how we got here and end up like not being very effective for the people, you know, that they're trying to help. So, you know, those are just my thoughts on it.
Okay. So if you take the phrase, I'm just going to play devil's advocate for a second. If you take the phrase, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, or if you take the phrase, you know, you can give somebody enough rope to hang themselves with, right? It's like, okay, those phrases exist from examples of intentions being harmful. Because I know you touched on a little bit with, you know, intentions can lead to a little bit of enabling, but it can also lead to a lot more than just a little bit enabling. So do you think, like, with what you were saying, do you think having the intention will lead to being able to learn the skill versus you can have, because you, like, I think that was a good example of, you know, someone who's really good at conceptualizing, someone who's really good at, like, you know, figuring, like, working backwards, how do we get here, right? But then also ineffective when putting it in practice with a patient. So that is an example of maybe skill, but lack of intention.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are they equally important?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, that it is going to require like just intention to like be like better at what you're doing. I have watched people work in the field for like years and years and years, and they're like, dude, why am I not getting promoted? Why don't like they let me do this? Why don't they let me do that? And I'm like, dude, when's the last time you like read a book like pertaining to your field? When's the last time you took a training? When's the last time you got a mentor to sit down with you? So like the skill piece and yeah, I just get like on this super like passionate rant about just the values and everything. But you're absolutely right. The skill is so important, and it does require just a lot of like intentionality with like, in what ways do I want to get better? You know, a long time ago, I read a book on, it was called Never Split the Difference, but it was about like the art of just reflective listening and the impact that it has on people. And so I would just like sit there and I would like develop my craft, and that helped me develop skill. So yeah, to your point, I totally agree that skill is incredibly important.
Cool. When I was leaving treatment and I talked to my therapist about, you know, working in treatment and stuff, something she said, she was like, if you are going to do it, you can't go into it thinking like, oh, I'm going to make a whole bunch of money, I'm going to change all these lives. Me. I think that's the thing, is that if you go in with the intention of, well, I can, you know, make people get sober and I can change their lives and I can, you know, because I did it, like I can like get them to do it, and it's just to fuel your ego, then yeah, you're not going to read books, you're not going to take classes, you're not going to do anything to continue to grow your knowledge, because you already think you know everything. And I think that's the thing, is that there are people who want to get into working in treatment, or even, you know, in like the justice system, and it's just about feeding their own ego and feeling like, okay, now I can have power over this marginalized group or this group that like needs help. Now I can have power and I can have control because I came on the other side. And so they're not going to want to continue their education. And so that's just where I'm at with it, is I think intention is really, really important, because it'll lead you to growing and learning skills. But you have to be open and not going into it, you know, for you.
That's a really good point, because you can, something can look good, you know, but it's like, you know, I want to help people. And it's like, okay, but why? Do you want to help people because people need help, or do you want to help people because it makes you feel good?
Yeah.
Because like, I'll run into that a lot, like with, like, I'll hear a lot in recovery spaces where people are like, oh, like, I just don't have anyone I'm helping right now. Like, I just need someone I'm helping. Like, I'm going crazy, like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that is like the shittiest reason I have ever heard to want to help somebody. I'm like, are you actually connecting with these human beings? Are you actually listening to them and seeing where they are, and seeing like, are you actually even able to help them? Like, do you have enough shared life experience where they could like really open up to you and you could really help them out? Or are you just going stir crazy and you're so caught up in self, the quickest way you know to get out of self is to just help somebody else, but you don't actually care about them. You just right. want to look like you're getting out of self.
Ooh. Yeah.
They want a reason to just talk about themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that to me is the absolute worst. If I go to you for help and you immediately just start blabbing about yourself and the whole time, and you lost me. You lost me. I'm going to be like, okay, cool. And I'm never going to talk to you about needing help or anything ever again, because it's like, I'm not a sounding board. Your job is supposed to be for me to come to you for support or for help in, you know, in my recovery, not to hear about your life story. And, you know, like today I took this workshop and this guy did that. He was life story. And the leader was like, so are you going to help the person like with finding a job? And they're like, well, I'm just giving my experience. And it's like, if you're working in recovery and you're wanting to help people and you're helping them build their lives, what the hell is you going on a monologue how's that going to help them get a job?
Yeah. Like, there's a fine line between relatability and then commandeering the conversation.
Yeah. And like, I think that's like also a little bit where like you know, skill comes in. Because, mm-hmm. man, I got to tell you, I didn't, like, I only actually, like, know this now because, like, I actually had the experience of, like, just, like, trying to, like, help people in treatment. And, like, I would just give my testimony of, like, oh, well, this is how I got sober. And yeah, like, you know, just you had mentioned, like, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? Like, I think, like, yeah, we, like, want to be – like, everybody, like, I think goes into work essentially wanting to be able to be helpful in some capacity. It then just really becomes how – what makes us effective is us then tailoring, well, then in what way – like, what makes me helpful here? Hmm. And I just totally agree with you that, like, nothing drives me nuts more when – like somebody's in a crisis and then like the immediate response is, yeah, but let me tell you what I did when I was in treatment. Dude, right? I actually teach crisis prevention, and one of the first things I try to tell everybody is like, dude, if somebody's in a crisis, stop giving advice, stop talking about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, all anyone actually wants is to be heard. That's what you're trying to do in that moment, is just, you know, somebody's in a crisis and you're like wanting them to hear you. Instead, let's like hear them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just totally agree.
Yeah. Check your ego at the door.
Yeah. Which, like, dude, it's going to come up, you know, the ego piece, right? The like, dude, just I there's been times where I've probably gotten on power trips. You know, there's been times where I have like been a dick and I've like had to then just like check myself and like, dude, there's been a few times I've had to like apologize to like the people that I'm serving to like, because I was just like acting out of character because mm-hmm. like of like some ego shit.
Yeah.
With, you know, I just have a question. You mentioned you had like a 10-year gap. How did you learn professionalism working in recovery? Because that's something else I've noticed, is that a lot of people, they haven't really worked, you know, 9-to-5s in a very long time. And then you want to jump into working in recovery and helping people. But how did you figure out like that professionalism piece?
Yeah, absolutely. Can I throw out some like wild thing real quick?
Please do.
Is like the thing of like treatment versus recovery, right? Of like, you know, because like recovery is something that's like, you know, and I know like when you're talking, like I'm hearing you talking about like working in treatment, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. But like, you know, you'll hear like the person who's like, you know, 20, 30 days like sober, like talking about, well, like I got that job in recovery. And, you know, man, if like anyone who's listening to this is like thinking about getting in the field, you know, just the difference between recovery and treatment. You know, recovery is something that's just, there's so many different paths. You started off the podcast with that. But no matter what the path is the recovery is free and available to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And treatment is, you know, is a form of therapy. The reason why I mentioned that is because I think sometimes we can think that like working in treatment is actually going to be me just being able to like bring my recovery like into this, right? I'm just going to be able to like go in there. I'm going to be able to like give my testimony, right? Mm-hmm. Like what we were talking about. And then like, they're going to like get better and I'm going to therefore get some kind of like, you know, some kind of like recovery. I'm going to get my own recovery from that. Also, I forgot the question that you had raised. I went on such a tangent. I'm so sorry.
10-year gap.
Oh yeah. The 10-year gap.
You start working in treatment.
Yes.
Professionalism.
How did I learn professionalism? Oh my God. If anybody I work with is listening to this, they're actually going to laugh their asses off. They're like, he didn't. but like actually what I learned about professionalism was just mentors, right? Mentors and also making a lot of mistakes. Dude, I used to like come in and I used to just talk about like smoking crack and whatnot and like, you know, shooting heroin with like the clients, and like they were just my buddies, you know?
Yeah. Because that's the thing, is that it's such a free flowing open environment. It's like you want to share your experience and be like, oh, I can relate. But my experience, I've worked with a person and they start just dropping F bombs and like they're cussing and they're saying the C, and they're just, it's like, okay, whoa, you are like, you're still an employee, and you're like, it's like a little bit too comfortable.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's how do you like, like balance that? Because it's like, yeah, you want to relate to them and be like, yeah, like I did drugs too, but you don't want to walk in and be like, yeah, what, you know, what the fuck is up, you guys? Like, you know, fuck, you know what I'm saying? You know, yeah. Like, ugh.
Yeah. So I think it first took me just not being professional and realizing what that got me, because then like I'm now, you think that I'm your friend and then I'm having to redirect you. And now like there's actually a power difference here. And I've now hurt you in a way that I could have prevented had I just had better boundaries. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, just like knowing that I am meant to be friendly, but I'm actually like not meant to be like, you know, if I'm like truly going to be helpful to somebody, I'm actually not meant to be that person's friend.
Tiny clap.
Well, I think that's a great segue into emotional labor versus professional responsibility and having those boundaries within yourself and with the people you're working with. So what did, like, I know you said it was, you know, making mistakes at first, but can you like recall, like, is there any specific instances that really come to mind where you're just like, oh my God, like, I can't believe I used to think that was okay.
Yeah. I would actually like go out with like former clients, like as far as like we would like me and like a bunch of like the people that I would serve, we would all like go out like as a group and like eat pizza and whatnot. You know, like a few months after they would leave treatment, like we would just be friends. I used to like bust clients' balls like they were just like my buddies, right? Like I would like swear up a storm, and I look back at that and I'm like, dude, I can't fathom like me doing that. Like also one time this client, like, and this was like 2 years into it, the client like pissed me off, and I was about to move to a new job, and I like woke him up. And I was like, I need you to know all the ways that you've been an asshole, and I need you to fix this. Yeah. Right? It was not, that was not me trying to help him. That was actually me like, yeah, I know, right? Dude, so those are all the things, like, you know, you had mentioned, like, you know, the road to hell ends up getting paved with like good intentions. And I think I start the day off with this great intention, and then I start getting grumpy.
No.
You know?
I can't retweet.
And then, yeah. And then, like, dude, shit just, like, happens. I'm human, man. And, you know, that's, like, you know, dude, the emotional labor piece, it is going to have an impact on me, and then I'm going to have an impact on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why, like, dude, like, heal. Like, do your own shit. Take care of, like not talk about, like, you guys, like, but, like, I need to heal. I need to take care of my own shit before I'm going to, like, you know, go into an environment of people who are just, like, really, like, needing me to be able to show up as my best possible self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, like, being in recovery, working in treatment, you know, especially as time goes on, it's like more places that are taking your attention, right? You have people that you're helping, you have people who rely on you, and then your job is still relying on you. How do you balance keeping your cup full so you're not then, you know, pouring from an empty cup and waking a client up in the middle of the night and being like, here's how you're an asshole? Yeah.
Oh man, I need to find that guy, and like I need to apologize. I'm like, I really like it comes up, and I'm like, need to find that guy and apologize to him one day, and it's gonna happen.
Well, if he's listening and leaves a comment, we'll let you know.
Bro, I'm so sorry. So first off, I just want to throw out that when I was taking CAC classes, they stopped everything and they said, "What do you think is the most high risk environment for somebody?" Early in sobriety, or actually did not say early in sobriety. They said somebody in sobriety to work at. And somebody said a bar, and somebody at, like, said a strip club, and like in a bunch of other different places were thrown out there. And he was like, no, like what you guys are doing, right? Mm-hmm. Working in treatment. Because what happens is they get there, and like that's why like the recovery versus treatment thing is so important. Because what will happen is we will stop participating in our own recovery. And dude, whatever that looks like, go get therapy, like, right? Like, dude, get a mentor, find a fellowship. There's so many different avenues. But like, dude, participate in your own recovery. because they will end up going back out while they are serving their population. And so, you know, to your question of, man, what is it that I like do to like fill my cup? I make sure that my job is not my entire, I love my job more than anything in this whole world. Like sometimes it makes me want to cry.
More than your dog?
Okay. But dude, this is the thing. He actually literally comes to work with me, right? Which then makes me love that place so much more. But I don't make that the only thing. I participate in my own recovery outside of this, right? I'm like, I'm reaching out to like a group of people. I'm hanging out with friends. I'm like, I'm participating in life. And I think that that's just something that's like really important because like, I think especially for like, you know, the recovery population, it can be easy to like work your 9 to 5 and then you go home and you like pass out and then you like go and you do it all over again. And like you were talking about your family members that, you know, work in the field, it's a, it does take, you know, there a lot of time is put in. You're not always doing the 40 hours. And so you're also like having to make sure that you're still, you know, like maybe moving other things around in order for you to be able to participate in your own recovery and just like in your own like mental health and life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've seen, especially when I was new and I was watching people hit, like young people hit like a year, because like a lot of places, you know, if you're going to be in recovery and working in treatment, they require you have at least a year. And I would see them, they would get that year, they would get their recovery job, and then their sobriety went right out the door. And I think that was another deterrent for me working in treatment, because I was like, you know what, I've had fragile sobriety before. And, you know, I feel like, you know, if I, you know, loosen up on my game and I'm like working a job where people are highly likely to relapse, you know, that might not be a place I want to find myself. But yeah, this is good because I haven't seen it happen in so long. You know, most of the people I know who are working in treatment are still working in treatment and still working the, you know, whatever recovery program they need to be doing, and things are fine, you know. But my first couple years of sobriety, that is the opposite story. But yeah, it is super important to have that distinction. And then also, you know, I think like that burnout is so real because it's not just the 9 to 5, you know, sometimes it's a 12-hour day. Sometimes it's, you know, 11 days on, one day off. And, you know, a schedule like that would never work for me in a million years. I mean, a schedule like that does work for some people to an extent, but you still have to, like, what happens when you're 11 days on, you haven't gone to, like, you haven't been able to go to, you know, whichever recovery fellowship you're part of, and you haven't been able to get, you know, you're up in the middle of the night, you're sleeping during the day. So your hours are different from everyone who's awake that you talk to on a regular basis. And now you're, things have to look different. You have to be able to adjust on your feet and still feed your own recovery. It's just, you know, I think it's a lot more than, woohoo, help people, you know, like, that's great. That's great. That's super awesome. But there's also a lot to it. And I think you touched on that really well. Yeah. So what should people consider before working in treatment? Like, what questions should they ask themselves? It's like a pre-qualifier.
Yeah. What are some questions that they should ask themselves? You know, you like mentioned this, like, why do I want to do it? Right. Like, why do I want to do this? Like, am I, and actually it's so funny because I think a lot of it really ends up coming just like, you know, just afterwards. It's just one of those things where like, at least for me, I think I had to experience it for me to really know that I was like, really going to enjoy it. I, you know, first off, am I still carrying a lot of shit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I in a position to where I can take on all that emotional labor? Because when we think of helping people, you know, at first we think of, in this like, sounds ridiculous, but like we think of like rainbows and butterflies and whatnot, right? Like where I'm gonna like go over and like we're gonna hug it out. I'm gonna tell you you're worth it and you're gonna say thank you so much. And it's not that, right? Like you're like, if you're helping somebody who is hurt, that means that they're probably going to hurt you or they're going to try to hurt you in some way, right? Dude, that can be emotionally, that can be mentally, that can be physically. Am I in a position to where I can handle that in a way where I'm not taking that out on another person? right? And it's like really just kind of asking myself, dude, where am I at with my own recovery? Mm-hmm. You know, dude, nobody's perfect, but am I actively participating in it, you know, once again? Also something to like really consider, dude, is it feasible to be working in this? I can't tell you how many people, like, they have a mortgage and they're like, yeah, dude, I actually decided I want to work. And they'll say, I want to work in recovery. It's like, well, like entry level positions for, you know, for people who don't have any kind of degrees or anything is like not going to pay your mortgage. It's not going to be able to support a family. You know, like, dude, do you have like, you know, $16,000. Do you have $1,600 a month rent to pay? Then like, dude, an entry level position in that is like probably not like the best thing. You know, dude, once again, you want to go help people. That's awesome. But like also make it like make sure that you're like not like ruining yourself or putting yourself in a bad position just for something that in that moment you're considering like the only opportunity that you're going to be able to get like in being able to like help people or to even work in this field.
Mm. I like that a lot better than some like the standard cookie cutter answers where it's just like, oh, well, do you want to help people? Are you prepared for the worst? Where you're like, can you still pay your mortgage? What's your rent look like? You
know? Right.
Like in this economy, please. but no, like if someone does have the opportunity, you know, like where that doesn't have to be as much of a concern, you know, I think that power to them.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, absolutely. I like, you know, think sometimes like we can like shit on like treatment centers for like hiring people in early sobriety, and we can shit on people in early sobriety for choosing to work in treatment centers, right? But the reality is I've seen people with a year or 2 or 3 years sober like go in and just do very poorly. And I've seen other people at 30, 60 days at places just do it, participate in their recovery, and like flourish.
Yeah. Because there's not an exact, it's not a science. No. It's not, oh, if this is everything leading up to it, here's going to be the outcome.
Yeah.
It really just depends. That's why I think it's so like, you know, how do we bring in reality to this field, reality to, you know, being like, you know, an addict, being an alcoholic, and then working in this field. Like, what does that look like without shitting on someone's hopes and dreams? And, you know, it's like, no, like if this is something you want to do, then by all means, you know, pursue that. But with like anything, if you want to, you know, if you want to pursue anything else, also pursue that. But no matter what you pursue, it needs to be realistic. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the point.
Absolutely.
I want to add one thing, because I wanted to work in treatment, and then, you know, I follow the recommendations of like, wait till you have this much time, try, you know, do this. I think a question you'd ask yourself is, I like that you mentioned looking, like checking yourself inward. Do I have more work to be done? Because you have to have so much patience. And I would say, ask yourself, do you have patience? Because I love my people, but God damn it, does it require so much patience I work alongside addicts. And again, love my people. It is testy. It is testy. You know, like I catch myself being like, I told Christian one day, I was like, I actually need to work on my patience, because it's hard for me to deal with people in recovery. Because you're dealing with people that are in different stages of their sobriety, that had different, you know, come from different walks of lives. And you know, I come from a professional background, and so then it's like seeing certain things, I'm just like, so I ask myself a lot, like, okay, do I have the patience to do this? And the fact that I don't, what work do I have to do within myself where like this stuff isn't irritating me so badly? I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. A lot of us, or I'll take that home with me.
Yeah.
And then I'll take it out on the dog. No, I'm kidding.
You took it out on his ear. Fix that shit.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He's adorable.
We do not condone animal abuse.
I assure you guys, he is the one abusing me, okay? but, yeah, I will take it, like, back home with me, you know? And then, like, I'm taking it back home with me, and now I'm, like, agitated, and then I'm, like, coming back in with that. Like, dude, am I capable of, like, detaching, you know? Like, just a little bit. You know, obviously, like, I'm not meant to be this cold, unfeeling machine. You know, like, we're human. We're going to get pissed. Like, I'm going to hear the stories of people, and I'm going to be so upset on their behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But am I capable of still, like, removing that so that when we're interacting, that's not the driving force behind, like, what I'm, like, trying to do here? Because, you know, once again, man, I just keep on going. The road to hell is paved with great intentions, right? Like, we're like, dude, I want to be able to, like, care. But sometimes in that care, I'm then actually, like, very ineffective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And currently you work in family outreach, right?
Yeah. So I, you know, do a little bit of family coaching. You know, I think that that's something that we just, like, forget a lot, you know, where, like,
the
somebody,
families.
Yeah, the family. Like, dude, the whole system, dude. Yeah. Like, there's this, like, stereotypical thing of, like, oh, it's mom and dad's fault. It's not. But, like, dude, there's no way for you to be in a very sick environment without you being affected. Right. And so now you have two sick people. But what happens is because they're doing the heroin, we're only talking to this person. Right. Because mm-hmm. they have the mental illness. We're only talking mm-hmm. to this person. When you have a whole other party here mm-hmm. that was impacted and is also going to be interacting with them again. Right. They're usually going back home to them. And also, you know, 7 times out of 10. There's actually probably been something that this person or these people have maybe been contributing to in, like, not necessarily in making this person unwell, but in contributing to the dynamic or the pattern that has been keeping this person sick.
And I imagine with family coaching, that ability to detach and not get, you know, like, super upset on anyone's behalf is a crucial component.
Yeah. Sometimes I get really upset on the family's behalf, dude, especially when it's like just the addicted population. I'll be like, yeah, no, kick them out. You need to just kick them out. And like, you're now my mom, right? Like, I will take you on. And then, like, there's other times where it's like the opposite, where like the people that I'm serving, I just get so angry on their behalf because it's like, dude, like, it's just like very apparent about how their system has maybe contributed here.
Mm-hmm.
But like, this is what's so cool is that like when you like create a dialogue with people, loved ones are so willing to start to participate in their own recovery. Mm. Like surprisingly so. And like no one ever thinks that their mom and dad are willing to change. No one ever thinks it. Everybody just assumes that's just the way. And dude, I can't tell you how many times we are all so pleasantly surprised by mom and dad's ability, or actually let me rephrase it, mom and dad's willingness to just like to change
mm-hmm.
and to like do something to be able to like, you know, to contribute to this in like a helpful and meaningful way.
And within that, like, what have you found that the families commonly misunderstand about the dynamic and what's going on?
I think it goes back to helpfulness, man. Right? Dude, like so much of our suffering, I think, goes back to just like us just trying to be helpful to ourselves and helpful to other people. The first thing being is that we assume that happiness is like the peace, right? Once they get happy, they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and okay, and so they try to maneuver everything so that they can be comfortable and so that they can be happy. And that ends up being like a direct contributor towards like just them being, you know, them. That ends up being like kind of like the enabling thing that we were talking about, right? You know, where we start to then do something for somebody that they can actually do for themselves. You know, people healing is painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I see a lot of times families getting in the way of their loved one's own healing because they're thinking, because my loved one's hurting in this moment, it's bad. It's not bad. It's actually them growing and it's them learning. The issue is that it's actually hurting you to watch that. And so if there was one thing that I can just like, man, just really teach family members is that your ability to be helpful to your loved one who is suffering is always going to be directly proportionate to your ability to sit in your own distress.
Mm.
You know, dude, like, I love, dude, dad, I love my dad so much. Dad, I love you. But, like, he, do people do that? I feel like people do that.
Well, they do tonight.
Yeah. So my dad was just so terrified of me being, like, homeless. He was so scared of me being hurt, of me being uncomfortable, that he probably enabled me a lot more than, like, than he would have had he just allowed me to experience pain. And so, yeah, if there's just one thing that I could just, like, I'm not saying, like, dude, just detach, like, love your person. You can, I can love you, and I can also still connect with you and have a meaningful relationship and still be at peace if you're suffering. But I think that we have this idea that I can't, that I won't be okay until you're okay. Yeah. And, like, what, dude, you have, like, dude, some people it takes 5, 10, 15 years for them to finally get it, or for them to finally recover, for the meds to get right. You're going to wait 15 years for you to finally just have that relationship. You're going to wait 15 years for you to just, like, finally be able to, like, just take that breath. I can breathe independent of you. And, yeah, if there's just one thing, like, I could just really, like, get across to them, it's that.
I think that's why that codependency book is super common in in our world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it goes both ways, you know, with, you know, our families, or a lot of times families being like, well, I can't be okay unless you're okay. But then also, you know, with addicts being like, well, I can't be okay unless they're okay. And then it's just like this convoluted, it's the most fucked up spaghetti you'll ever have. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a cool place to bring it in for a landing. Is there anything that we didn't really touch on that you would like to leave our audience with?
I'm just, like, really thinking about it. I just really appreciate you guys letting me be here, you know, letting me talk about, you know, just a field that I'm just, like, absolutely love, like, working in, because I don't want to, like, shit on, like, you know, I don't want to shit on, like, people in, like, recovery working, like, you know, in treatment. What I really hope is that, like, when people go in, they can just be more informed, because then that way, if we're more informed, we're then more effective. Mm-hmm. Right? That's all I just ever want, is just, like, I want us to be able to go in there and I want us to be effective, because, dude, you know what I've noticed about people in recovery? Regardless of whatever field they work in, when they work in it and when they're passionate and they're working on their own shit, they're just so effective. And I think that we suffer with, like, poor self-esteem and all this other, like, stuff. And I think sometimes that can put us in this position to where, like, we, like, are then, like, we're too scared to negotiate a salary or to, like, ask for anything, or we're then, like, you know, more than willing to work, like, you know, 100 hours, you know, a week, for only, like, rent, you know. And and so, like, my only, like, you know, hope is that, you know, the people, you know, who are in recovery, you know, like 2 days, 30 days, 3 years, just be able to go into this just a little bit more informed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for having Southpaw. He's just been so relaxed, and he's had just, like, a fantastic time.
Aw, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Where can the audience find you? They want to connect.
They didn't catch me outside.
How about that?
No, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Look, they put that on the form, and I put Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, hashtag Hey Baby Gorgeous. Okay, so you can find me on Facebook, Cody Moniz. You know, you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. Look, guys, it is not hard to find me, man.
Everybody knows you.
Yeah. look, dude, you just ask somebody, and they'll find me. And I am, and yeah, dude, this is also the other thing, dude, if anyone ever wants, like, assistance, guidance, in any capacity, dude, I could talk about this for, like, hours, right? I could just talk for hours. And so, anyone could reach out to me.
Cool. Sorry. I have a piece of skin. got distracted. All right, cool. So, your information will be in the description box, and the YouTube video, your Instagram and your Facebook. And you can also check out other episodes on YouTube, and you can check out the Most High Media app, where you'll find more episodes of this as well, and documentaries, short films, etc. And you can find Most High Media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. So make sure to like, follow, share, subscribe, etc. This show is made possible from the Georgia Opioid Crisis Abatement Trust. Thank you. And thank you to our donors and sponsors. This has been the Most High Show.